because he had so much history behind him, and he was an old gentleman, a very kind man, and they just liked him very much to have him come in and speak to them. Well, Gene, I'm going to let you tell us how you happen to know Mr. Morgan.
Well, I was raised in Central Oregon, and Tom used to come and herd sheep next to my father's ranch. And he was up close to his 80s, right at 80, I think. But anyway, I used to go out into the sheep camps and visit with him. I was like these kids that Jim's talking about. I was fascinated with his stories. And I used to, he came up there about four or five different years. And he would just spin yarns and a lot of history. He was very, real interesting, and he was quite a religious man. And but he loved to he loved the outdoors, and he liked kids, of course, and could hold your attention. We used to stay overnight with him, and he'd just stay up till midnight, you know, and we'd sit around the campfire, and he'd tell stories, and he could cook. I always remembered he'd take the flour sack, you know, this is really fascinating to me, and he'd mix his biscuits right in the sack, you know, and he loved, I loved to trap and hunt, and he was quite a bear trapper. I know he'd caught over 40 some bear in traps, and I had a bear trap I'd bought when I was about 12 years old, and he would borrow it, and we'd go out, and while we were there, I think we caught three or four, but since Jim asked me about Tom and showed a little interest in him, there's a lady that Tom was real close to up there, and I'd called her twice, and she's written me a letter about Tom, and she could probably tell, the letter probably tells more about him than I do. I could go on and on with about him, but he was an old, his folks came across in an ox team, you know, on a wagon train back in 46, the book says there. This is his book. He wrote this. This is the little book he wrote. And he was born in 1870 around John Day, around the Fossil, between Fossil and John Day. And he was involved in, like his story goes, in he calls it the Last Indian War. And it goes on, and I remember him telling this, when I think he was seven, and his brother or sister was a little bit older, they had to ride a horseback. They went all the way from Fossil clear into the Dalles to get away from these Indians. You know, they were coming through burning and burning the houses and so forth. And and another story was, I was raised close to Mockland, which is up on the Deschutes. And he was always telling a story about old Chief Kalina. He was a renegade Paiute Indian. And he had all the rest of the tribes afraid of him. And anyway, he'd done something to Maupin. I can't remember if he was at Calgary or what. But anyway, Maupin went after him and got him, you know. And Tom had seen the rifle, and the rifle is in the Dalles Museum now. It's in 44 something or other, I can't remember. But anyway, I could go on and on, but if you want, I could read this letter that Mrs. Lois Dyke wrote about Tom and her experiences with him. Okay, it says, "Dear Jean, it was nice to talk to you this evening. Since then, my mind has been buzzing with happy thoughts and recollections of their interesting visits and times enjoyed with Tom. He was one of the most unforgettable characters one would meet in a lifetime. I have several letters and clippings he sent me. Wish there was time to have copies made. I have one letter he sent in answer to a letter he wrote to U.S. Senator Richard Neuberger. Tom was quite a politician. He liked, you know, he was always a ranting and a raving about something, you know. Of course, this didn't interest us kids, but I can remember this, you know, this part. And it dated, and I've got the letter here, dated February 26, 1956. It was concerning proposals before Congress, which would provide a more adequate retirement program, and then some more stuff onto that. Uncle Tom's interest in politics was never ending. It was my letters, let's see, he wrote many letters, to many politicians all the time. We have so many clippings. August the 14th, 1955, let's see, this is another thing he did that I have the clippings. He climbed Mount Hood, and which was quite an experience. He was 84 years old at the time. When we talked about it, I told him I would go too. I went to Timberline Lodge ahead of time to arrange for a guide. Dale Thomas, who I'm wondering was the Oregon State wrestling coach in later years. I've always wanted to contact him. My pictures, slides are interesting. I remember so well, as I talked to Dale, I was very careful not to mention Tom's age. She thought that he wouldn't want to go. So finally he said, well, how old is he? Because I had mentioned the word elderly several times. His response was, well, certainly, we'll certainly try it. Tom climbed like a deer. But he was a real, for 80 years old, it was unbelievable how the shape he was in. He could ride horses, you know, we rode horseback all the time, and he could just go for days, you know, just hours, and of course, tending his sheep. See, Tom climbed like a deer, talking all the way. I can remember his voice as he sang the old hymns, Dwelling in Beulah Land. And he was quite religious. His words, I'm sitting on the mountain underneath the cloudless sky, as he sat on top of Hood. What a joy it was, and what memories. Uncle Tom loved the summers he spent in the area, tending sheep. We spent many hours with him. His mind was so alert, and he noticed how exact he was with dates and facts. I used to marvel at that, for I know as we grow older, we forget and sometimes get things mixed up in telling experiences. Tom never seemed to. The morning he got his 45th bear was something else. He had to walk quite a distance to get it. To get to the phone. It was at my Aunt Mary's. That's where he went. I can remember almost his exact words. This was after 6 a.m. He says, I have the old Bruin in the trap if you want to come. I drove a Jeep to get to the area, something we rode. Sometimes we rode our horses. We had to find out in a remote area, I guess it was his sheep. The biblical references to sheep became so much more plain to me after watching Tom and his tender care for every animal. That is why he didn't care for bears, because they were so destructive to his charges. I remember one time I went up, he had about, I think there was about six or eight different camps he would go through, all different times of the summer. He'd stay in one about 3 weeks, and then he'd move his sheep and go to another area. And this one day I went up there, and here an old bear had got into his camp, you know, and his grub box was just all tore up, and his tent was tore up, and old Tom was out there, and he was really mad. I think he borrowed my bear trap that time too, and I think he caught that one. Tennessee.
That's in central Oregon.
Yeah, this is up out of the Dalles, south of the Dalles, about 50 miles. Mm-hmm. Close to the, well, we were right next to the Indian reservation.
They still have bears there?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of bears there. They don't trap them anymore. That's against the law now. I'll always keep that trap, though. I'll never get rid of that. I'll hand it on down to my... It's about that big.
Oh, wow.
Let's see. I wrote many letters and cards in the faraway places. And remember one instance when we found him, he told about an Indian girl which had made some of his letters, mailed some of the letters for him. He said, oh, she had the most beautiful voice, and so on. Perhaps not see words when he replied, oh, Uncle Tom, you have been out here too long. Anyway, she kind of chuckled. He was getting a little lonesome, I guess. Because he'd go out there, he'd be out there, well, from about the 1st of April to the 1st of November. Mm-hmm. He really liked to have company. I still see him mixing the frying pan bread the top of the sack, and it goes on, like I said, he worked with his food. We had taken, they went up and they took, this time they take frozen strawberries and farm fresh cream to put in his delicious bread. What a treat. He was very nutritious conscious and cooked very nourishing meals over an open fire. His knowledge of everything was something glory. In the winter months, he read, and as he lived so near Pacific University, he took advantage of the library there. He attended most of the, he attended most of the Morgan reunions at the Mount Hood Meadows at government camp, where the baby was buried. Now this is when they were coming over the Oregon Trail. There's graves scattered all along. Well, his, which would be his great aunt, she was a baby, she died there, and they there's a plaque there in the grave, and this is at Trillium Lake, real close there, and they used to have their reunions, or they'd get there every summer. And then the Herald helped to install the plaque. There's a plaque there. His interest in history was amazing. I'm so sorry we did not have recordings as so much as he told us personally. And then that's about the end of the letter. But they do have some tapes of him at the Oregon, at the Maine Oregon Historical Society. That's what I was told. Yeah. And Jim was asking me, he was married.
He was?
Yeah. I called Lois tonight and asked, and for over 50 years. But they never had any children. And she asked him one time about, because he had a big ranch up in Idaho. But he lost it. I guess his wife was real sick or something. Anyway, she said that took all his money, that time. And he had two or three brothers and sisters, and one doctor brother that lived on the Salmon River, had a big ranch there, and to get there, it's still pretty famous. I can't remember the name of it, but you have to fly into it. Well, that was his brother. And his brother's wife is still alive. And she's a doctor back in Chicago. And did any of you know Mildred Berger? Now, this was Tom's housekeeper. She lived here and took care of Tom. And when he died, which was about 1966, I didn't look that up. But she got what was left of, and she still had the home. And I don't know, Lois said that 2 years ago she was still alive. And well, this book here is, the address was, it's on the Sunset Drive here, but she said 2342 Sunset Drive. That must be just beyond the pool there, isn't it?
It sounds like it would be.
But then she said he moved to us 19th Avenue. And I don't know where that
was. Well, when I used to go and pick him up, and I picked him up over on D, like in Dog, D Street.
Okay.
Way over by the old city park.
Uh-huh. He didn't know there was a city park on D Street.
No, there's no city park on D Street.
I said it used to be.
Used to be. Where was it?
Naylor's Grove.
Oh, you mean Naylor's Grove.
Well,
all
it
right.
was a city okay. park.
Yeah, no, that'd be, you know, so it'd be maybe D and 19th about in there, maybe? Or all the way out to the park.
Well,
that would be,
I don't know, but
point,
it was a little toward
west.
The middle of the block on the east oh. side. And I picked him up there.
Well,
but I didn't know that he lived on Sunset.
She said he moved. He moved from this address.
Yeah.
And because he must have lived to be about 96.
Do you have a picture of him?
Yeah. I've got these. She sent me. This is the letter from from Neuberger. She sent me this. This is the letter from the fellow that guided him to the top of Hood. And here's the picture. Here's the clipping from it was in the Oregonian. I remember reading this. And here's the. This is in. This is quite an article about him. And if there's a picture of him. It's. And there's a picture in here, of course, when he was a young man. He was a pretty handsome fellow, really.
Did he write this?
Yeah, this is his little book that he had written.
Is this in publication someplace, Gene?
Well, he just had one publication, you know, and it never. I don't know how many.
I was just wondering if
that could
they
be.
Have one at the state he's from.
I think they would at the state.
That could be easily duplicated, couldn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Recognize
every
scene.
He was real sympathetic towards the Indians because he'd seen a lot and he was quite religious and he was really against fire water. He called people.
It was printed in 1954 by the News Times.
Uh-huh.
So somewhere it should be.
How did he happen to come to live in this area?
This area? I don't know.
That's what I was wondering. How did he get Forest Grove from?
Now,
East
Laura, she could probably tell you that. She's got slides of him and all kinds of stuff. She was really enthused about it when I called her the other night and told her that what I was going to, you know, tell you people.
Where does she live now?
She lives up at, no, she lives at Moffitt, or up there on the farm.
Oh.
And she, well, in the same place she was when Tom was around us. But he went back quite a few years.
He was an outstanding individual, wasn't he?
Yeah, he really left a, you know, I'll never forget. I, you know, it's something that you, that you know, I probably can't explain it, but I remember one night, well, the night I got the book from him, he was in the first cabin. This is about 2 miles from our ranch, and he told me he wanted to see me. You know, he left word with my dad. So I walked over there, and he had this book, he just published it. And he was so proud of that thing. But I went in, it was a little old shack. It's a sheepherder shack. It's about a 12 by 12. You know, I had a stove and a bunk. And I went in there, and it was just full of smoke. And he was scurrying around there, but he'd build a big fire. And to get the rat smell out, he'd throw coffee grounds on top of the stove, burn.
There you go.
And this is supposed to smell better than the rats. He had all kinds of different, you know. And like one day there, I noticed this tin can and it had a whole bunch of holes in it, and it had a stick in it, you know. And I asked him what that was. Well, that was his washing machine. See, he put his clothes in a 5-gallon bucket, and then he'd he lost his thing up and down, and it
probably worked too. I bet you.
He was very clean, you know, out there in the dirt and the dust, you know, and he was always sharp, you know, just like Lois was saying about in the letter how clean he was when he cooked. Mm-hmm. He was really. And he was particular. We did this all on the fire, you know.
Gene, what did he cook?
Well, mostly, you know, bacon and eggs, and frying pan bread, and he was real particular. He didn't like sugar. He was pretty much of a, he watched his diet real well, you know, and he took care of himself.
I can understand how kids would sit right close to him and listen to all this stuff and ask questions, you know, mouth wide open.
Yeah, he'd just go on and on, especially with the exciting Indian stories. That used to really get me going.
Well, after all, you know, that's not too many years back, is it?
Well, let's see, this is about, when I first came was 54. See, I would have been 13. So I think I was about 12 the first year. Oh. About 53, 52,
3,
about when I first met him. And
but what I mean, the old gentleman himself wasn't too far removed from age era.
Yeah, no. But he'd seen a lot, you know. He'd seen the, as far as the Indian, you know, he'd seen them on the war path, you know, and he'd seen them, how they were treated, and, you know, they were put on the reservation, and at this time when they were on the war path, when he was a little kid, of course, but they were rebelling, and that was about the last time they did it. Mm-hmm. And, of course, there again, the fire water, he says in his book, you know, told the story, because they got into the whiskey at Pendleton, I think it was, and they all got drunk and they couldn't fight anymore.
Oh,
and,
well, I used to, when he'd come to our meetings, he'd tell about his ranch in Idaho.
Idaho, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And he drove a great bands of sheep from Eastern Oregon on up into
Montana, Idaho.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, Salmon River is in the middle part of Idaho. So.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He just traveled all over that country, horseback, you know, mm-hmm. wagon and horseback. Mm-hmm.
It was, what was he doing when you knew him here in Horseback?
Well, he was just a retired gentleman. Just a.
In
he would probably been around 80 years old.
In the winter and stay here. And then in April, he would come up, and then he would work for Abbott. This was the big rancher that lived next, he had about 30,000 acres. And we were just kind of surrounded by, my dad's place was pretty small compared to his. But he'd come up, I always remember one time, Dad went and got him off the trailway bus, and he had his bedroll, and he had his old 30-30. You couldn't ride that way on the bus anymore.
No.
What happened to his sheep when he was down here in the wintertime? Did he
well,
sell
see that,
them?
Yeah, all he did at that time was herd.
Herd other people's.
Yeah, had him in he was working for a big ranch.
I see.
Keep the coyotes out.
Yeah,
bears.
Yeah, he was and rattlesnakes. He was death on rattlesnakes. Lois is talking about. She was there one day when he had four of them, the rattlesnakes. Oh. There's a lot of snakes around. I remember one time there at the first cabin I was telling you about. He showed me the book. He had one out there, it was 43 inches long. He had it thrown out there, and he saved it for me to see it.
Oh,
but he was,
that is a long
thing. Did they attack the sheep?
It was a yard, 36.
But he thought they they weren't any good. They say there wasn't any useful purpose for them. So.
They say there is now.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Well, you could save the skin. And they get it out of them.
The medicine. They...
Well, I have read of some of the old timers around, you know, that would take the snake and cut it into slices and fry it, roast it.
I read, oh, yeah.
And it's very good.
I would think it would be.
Like chicken, they say.
That's why I live so long.
Yeah.
Well, it's just the idea you have of it, isn't it?
But it was quite a feat for him. I think he's the oldest man that ever climbed Hood. At that time, he was.
You think this Dale Thomas was the wrestling coach?
Yeah.
He really was.
I'm pretty sure he was.
I knew him.
Did you?
Yeah.
If you knew him, he's Thomas.
Thomas, yes.
It'd be fun to find out if it was the right.
I don't think he's, I think he's retired now, the university.
That's what Lois was saying.
He earned his PhD degree and was a wrestling coach there for a long time.
See, that would be close to 30 years ago.
Yeah.
55, you know, it's getting close. Mm-hmm. August 55. It says Dale Thomas at Timberline Lodge at that time. So that would have been his summer job there, I suppose, at the lodge. He could have been coaching then.
Oh, yes.
He was probably just a summertime job between school stations.
Well, it's too bad all those things aren't written down. And that's what Jim's trying to get us to do, is to write down all the things that we...
Well, you know, of course, Mrs. Dyke, Lois, she's got a lot of information on it, you know. And she was wishing that she could be here to show you the slides and things on it, you know, because she's got a lot more clippings and
you get a larger group.
No, she's... Lois is about 60 now. She used to be in my Sunday school teacher. She's neighbors. They really took an interest in him, and he really liked them because they were good people, and he was good. He was a good person. They took him all over. They took him to Idaho, back to his old ranch in the area, and they flew into this Salmon River Ranch. He took them back and showed them that, you know, and they've been all over with them. Mm-hmm. So if there was anybody that would collect them, you know, she'd have everything on it. You know.
He'd be a good character to write up on if somebody had the time to.
I wish I had the knowledge to do it, you know, because I really like the old fellow. Put it all together, you know.
You know, one thing you might, and the rest of us might, would be to, but since you've had contact with him, be your impressions of him, uh-huh. You know.
Yeah.
That'd make a good story.
I wondered about him sometimes, you know. He was pretty straight. Of course, I was young and had ideas too, you know. he tried to keep me straight, I guess you might say.
Seeing him all through your teens?
No, well, about five, see, from 12 to 16, I'd say, 17. And he was
here. Well, thanks a lot, Gene, for coming in. I'm sure what the others lost is our gain, and it's just too bad that we didn't have more out here.
I like one fellow I like to talk about. It's the first time I've ever done something like this, but this is interesting. I wish I had, you know, I was scared at first when you asked me to do this. And then the more I got to thinking about it, I thought, well, you know, I'll see what I can do. And then I thought about Lois. and she helped me a lot. And there's a lot more we can get on as far as that goes. Oh. And maybe...
Why don't you do that? I mean, pursue it. You
know? I should, I guess.
Yeah, why don't you? And, between the two of you, I mean, you know, work together or whatever. And really get it in a thin form. Of course, this is a really good start right
it's
there.
It's pretty short, you know. Uh-huh.
Well, part of it is just about O'Howard. I mean, it's a letter thing there. Uh-huh. So that isn't personally about
him. Not much of it's about his life.
No,
it's about his Indian work.
Yeah, uh-huh. It tells just a short story about his folks and coming out here. And,
Did he grow up over there in Central Oregon?
Yeah, but the book says, I think it was close to our, what do they call them, the guru over there. Father came out in the 90s. My other grandfather was born coming across the plains. And my great-grandfather went back and forth 7 times. He worked on the wagon trains. And they all landed up there in this area.
Your mother was born and raised up?
Yeah, she was, if you ever heard of Shantico, well, she was born right on the outskirts of Shantico. Yeah. She doesn't admit that. She doesn't think much of it. I think it's pretty neat, but she doesn't think much of it.
Yeah, it is neat.
You could almost go through it and never know it.
Yeah.
No.
It's foggy, you'd miss it.
My husband died. I've read about it because he's got interesting garden. This was Shantico?
Yeah, that's the way a lot of those towns go there. There's one place up there close to there. I've got to go back and take some pictures. There's an old hanging tree, you know, there. And there's all kinds of little things that if you don't know about, that you miss. You know. Mm-hmm. And a lot of old graveyards, you know, little graveyards all through that. Kind of sad. Most of the people are, they're little kids and women. About up to 30 years old. Seemed like it must have been an awful hardship on them.
Mm-hmm. There are graves like that out there, or a few cemetery I remember seeing, where there'd be a big monument with the man's name on it, and here would be a woman, and here would be 4 kids. Each one died at 3 months or 6 months or that kind of thing. Then on the other side, there'd be another woman and then her kids.
They're all... That country's just full of them, the old cemeteries.
It was a hard life.
There's one tombstone up there. I hope it's still there. I don't like to talk about it because I think someone would go up and steal it. But it's an epitaph on it. The fellow was drugged to death by a horse. And it's a poem, and like he wrote it. And I don't know how it goes, but I'd like to go up and take a picture of it and write it down. You know, but if... Some certain people knew about it, they'd take the whole headstone because it's just a little one, you know. They could pick it up. But it's really neat. Well, let me shut up.
Well, thank you, lady. I didn't even get the name of them. That were reading tombstones. Did any of you read that?
Mrs. Goldman. Her first name.
Yeah.
She's related to the Meeks.
This is something that
just
what we were talking about the last time. Here it says, the monument to David Hill of Hillsboro and the Reverend J.S. Griffin and Senator William Jolly Stone. These are big monuments that she's read. But she said, beside the graves of these powerful men lie the graves of humble farmers, hardworking families who came and went uncelebrated. William and Essie Tupper were buried together in the shadow of Reverend Griffin's monument, and beside them their son Harry is asleep in Jesus. A sleeping lamb embellishes his little tombstone. He was 2 years, 3 months, and 21 days old. And this is just exactly what we were talking about the last time, you see, that really the grassroots guy has been, well, he wasn't left out, he wasn't recognized because he wasn't prominent. And I wonder, we did suggest, do you want to do any more of this or do you want to adjourn?
Well, Helen said she had something.
I'll bring it next time.
Well,
what time? It's not.
It's 9 o'clock.
Oh, is it 9? Oh.
Yeah. Do we want to quit or do we want to go
How
ahead and do something?
How long is it, Helen?
About 3 pages.
Oh, I guess it's maybe we could do that. Or do you want to leave? I don't know.
I could bring it next time.
Well.
You just asked me to.
Yeah. Right.
Gather some information or write a little bit about
your family. Right.
And my dad's a business in town. Mm-hmm. But I'd be glad to bring it next time.
I brought pencil and paper because I didn't think anybody else would. And I thought maybe tonight we would write, well, we're all right here at the table. It's very convenient. We could just sit here and write names of people that we knew earlier, old-timers around here, and what did they do or what did they say? Harvey, do you remember old Jim Harper?
Yes, I do.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I can tell you.
Everybody remembers old Jim. Okay.
He's the guy who's driving the Columbia Railroad with a bookstore on his back. And
bacon bread.
This is...
Oh, no.
Really? What?
He told that kind of story.
What?
Yeah. Yeah.
And Prickett's hearse never left the mortuary without him sitting beside the driver and helping drive some of the time, holding the horses while the other fellow was maybe engineering, getting the casket in and out of the hearse or something. He was always up there.
Well, now, didn't his brother live down the lane?
Yes.
Aiden?
Aiden. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, here we got some old timers going already, you see.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Mrs. Baber.
Now, who is Mrs. Baber?
Welcome across, Grandma.
The Granville Baber.
Where Gladys Baber. Waldorf lives in the Cornelius house. That was Baber.
Baber's
house.
Baber
they built it. Cornelius built it and Baber bought it.
Were they, did they have a donation land claim?
No.
Just
to
care of the good old house.
Well, it's the Cornelius house. Cornelius built it, but Baber bought it very soon after because he was killed in Portland.
It seems to me like as though I've seen the Baber addition.
Oh, it's got Baber in the sidewalk because the sidewalk must have been put in while they were there.
Was there a Baber addition?
Well, no, and that isn't, that's part of Clark's land, you see, that they were the land that, he owned the whole block. Oh. I've read about that when he bought that, when Baber bought it, he bought the whole block.
Yeah.
And it was, but that was 1872.
And Josephine was their daughter, wasn't
yes.
it?
Yes. Mm-hmm. One that lived there a long time.
Well, wasn't part of it on the other side of 19th? Wasn't half of the block on that side of the street?
Well, who was old Push Thomas?
Catherine knows the nicknames for all these people in town.
The apple man. He had an apple orchard out here at Dilly, and he had all this winter long. He sold apples right in, right by the National Bank building, facing Pacific Avenue, the mold buildings. He sold apples all winter long.
Why did they call him Push? Did he have a cart?
No, I think he walked, plugged his head out.
Oh.
Like that. That's the only reason I could think of it.
But, yeah.
He lived in the house right on the corner of 18th and right across from Haller Apartments.
Cedars.
Yeah, Haller Apartments, a big house.
Mm-hmm. He built that big house.
Oh, you're talking about the Thomases that...
The AB.
That brought you to town, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Forest Grove.
Really?
Uh-huh.
Yes, I remember them. We rented
We rented from them.
That's interesting. You rented from them. They're the ones that got the Higbees to Forest Grove. I mean, it's just amazing how things weave in and out.
And who was the little old shoemaker, Harley, that...
Daddy Burton. Daddy
Burton.
Right across in front of the old telephone office, right beside Doc Coon's office.
It's where the police station is now.
Yeah. See, the Joel Angel's blacksmith shop was on the corner.
Wasn't he just a little tiny Englishman?
Oh, yeah, all locked up.
Yeah.
He was an Englishman. Mm-hmm. But when he walked up on the street, he was wearing back like he was a soldier. And I guess he made his mind up that he wouldn't let that shoemaking business do it.
And it was the tiniest little shop with more shoes in there.
And who were those people who had the printing shop in Forest Grove years ago?
Who did?
Uh-huh. What was their name? I believe they were on 23rd, what's 23rd Avenue now? George Spark.
Spalding?
Spark. No.
Scott?
Was it Spark?
I know. I heard my dad speak of those people that came from work benefit, but maybe it was Spark.
Oh, wait a minute. There was, that was right up down where there's a barber shop now.
Yes.
Lee Sparks?
Yeah.
Brother?
Uh-huh. Yeah, Lee Sparks.
Leo Charlie.
Yeah, but wait a minute. There was there was another Sparks. He had a brother.
Spurgeon.
Mm-hmm. There was such a person. I
knew Lee off I can't think of his brother.
Harley, the Doc Large had his office upstairs over an old restaurant building where you go, the bus goes in now, you know, down that alley. And this Sparks had a printing shop just to the right of us to go in there.
I think it was Charlie, and his brother Ed was the carpenter.
Lee was a carpenter.
Lee.
Charlie was a boy. He drowned. Remember? Mm-hmm. Lee Sparks, right? His son.
That's right.
Drowned. Mm-hmm. There was two old fellows, though, that I remember. They would come by my dad's store there on North Main Street. Sam Walker.
I remember him.
The old shoe cobbler, you know.
Saturday Sam.
Is that what he...
Saturday Sam, because he played played a fiddle for Saturday night dances, and Nellie's dad was Sunday Sam.
Oh. And then there was old Granddad Caples. I don't know whether he lived with Art Caples over on the south end of town or not, but they would come and they would stop at my dad's store and they would talk in Chinook. They talked a Chinook Indian language. And, you know, they'd slap that language around, you know, and laugh and laugh. Whether they were swearing or what, I don't know, but they used to come by there, and I can't remember any of the words they said at all. The fact is, I wouldn't recognize one if I'd hear it, but they used to come by there, and they would sit and talk in Chinook.
Lee Sparks was a big carpenter. He built McCormick Hall here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the President's House, or Bates House, it's called now.
He built the three bankers' houses in Cornelius.
Right.
What kind of store did your father have, and where was it?
Well, he had a secondhand store.
Where was it?
Where?
Where Gratteri's on the corner. Well, he was just north of that.
Oh, not where the shoe shop is now. Well, I sort of remember a secondhand store there, I think, but I didn't know who it was.
Well, was that after the fire or before the fire?
Before.
Before the fire?
let's see, there was a Brown house. The Browns had a house back in
Grandpa
there.
Grandpa Brown.
Yeah.
Tabitha's.
Yeah, there was a Dulcina. Is that a name? Mm-hmm.
Yes,
yeah.
Dulcina and Ernestine.
Ernestine.
Roy Davidson.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then there was a building. And then there was another house that was way back in there. And then Dad had his store. Hey, the Milner. What was her name?
Mrs. Dixon.
Dixon.
Annie Dixon had a hat shop right next mm-hmm. to him. And then...
Well, was her maiden name Catching and then her married name Dixon or the other way around?
Oh, did she marry Ed Catching?
She married Ed Catching, yes.
Oh, okay,
yes.
So it was
they
Dixon
owned
first
our farm.
And Ed Catching.
We
okay.
bought from Annie and her mother.
Oh, did you?
And her father had been a doctor here.
Her picture's over here in the album. There's a picture in the album
yes,
of the
I'm
Catchings.
Sure. Yes, yes. Uh-huh. Well, later on, she moved farther south near the horror station, or horror
confectionery store.
Yeah, she moved mm-hmm. in the middle of
I
Main Street.
I remember when it was there. Uh-huh.
You remember Emma B. Penfield?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
First bookstore.
Mm-hmm.
Lady, where the Rogers Library went in.
Mm-hmm.
They she had to evacuate there when the Rogers Library was started. Same building,
yeah.
In the old building.
She liked flowers so well.
Well, she had a gorgeous relationship.
She was
had white tulips.
She was related to the Abrahams.
One of her relatives married Abraham.
She had a garden club for some of us kids, you know, children's garden club.
Oh, I shouldn't wonder.
Well,
yes,
I've got certificates, but I didn't know that she was probably the one that did it, though. Well, I've got certificates of being in children's garden
I don't
club.
Have any of them, but I remember I took four glads to a flower show of some kind in the basement of the old congregational
oh, yes.
church.
Mm-hmm.
And I got seven ribbons. My mother thought that was the best joke.
That was the daffodil show, but they had everything else.
I think that
I think they made a mistake.
Catherine and I talked about this once before, but they gave you an ice cream cone for all the kids in town. I don't know who gave
the
ice cream.
That was the women's club.
If you would bring in all of a basket of weeds that you had pulled or cut, see?
That was written up in the Ladies' Home Journal, if you please.
Oh, was it?
The Women's Club had a weed gathering contest. And most of us took gunny sacks of weeds.
Yeah.
And they would weigh them. And Mabel Rasmussen, Jenny Price's youngest sister, got first prize. And each of us got an ice cream cone as we handed our
collection.
You said basket. There probably were baskets.
Well, my mother had a basket about, a
uh-huh.
wicker basket about, so, you know.
Uh-huh.
And I remember filling that with weeds.
I remember saying
to
my brother
to
Morgan, you know, if we go over into Weston's old pasture, we could get gunny sacks and gunny sacks of ordinary thistles.
Ooh, thistles.
Thistles. He said that wouldn't be fair.
We had to get them in your own yard.
Oh, yeah, any place that we could glean them, but then, of course, a
not
spot like that really wouldn't have been fair. Mabel Rasmussen, the one that won the prize, got hers in the yards around the old Rasmussen house, and she wetted hers down every night. That we knew. The judges didn't.
Well, that's a strange thing, isn't it?
Well, should we have a meeting in December?
Yes.
I think the meeting in December is more sure than one in January.
That would be December 12th, if I